This is Health Yeah, your weekly update on what's going on in the health, wellness, and medical world with Monica Robbins.
Teens today seem to deal with much more than what their parents had to go through. Social media added another layer of concern, in addition to those feelings of self-doubt, stress, anxiety, and depression.
You don't have to fit in with the group. You don't have to always follow the crowd.
We're seeing a lot more anxiety, a lot more confusion. A lot of that turns into a lack of motivation.
And as a parent, it can be difficult to distinguish between what is normal teenage behavior and what could be more serious. We'll explore this topic ahead in this week's Prescription for Life. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Monica Robbins. As kids grow up, it is normal to have some anxieties due to social complexities, school demands, and family dynamics. Those rough couple of days can trigger what many of us likely experienced ourselves as teenagers, teen angst. It involves feelings of anxiety, worry, or dread, and it's not uncommon to happen for those between ages 12 and 18. On the other hand, kids experiencing ongoing and excessive mental health issues may experience a disruption of their daily activities and feelings of loneliness or isolation. We'll dig into those differences in just a bit with our expert. But first, there is a growing push to change the way we think and talk about mental health and how to spot the signs earlier. Take a look at this story from Isabel Lawrence in Cleveland.
In the halls of high school.
Well, being a teenager is hard anyway because their developmental stages are trying to figure out who they are.
Young adults do a lot of growing up, and more conversations about mental health are on the forefront.
We really started talking about it once I got to high school. It's when I started to become very aware.
Olivia Ikechi is a junior at Parma Senior High. She's part of the Hope Squad, a support system for fellow students. It's one way Marian Armstrong, a school counselor there, is hoping to bring mental health to the forefront.
We're seeing a lot more anxiety, a lot more confusion. A lot of that turns into a lack of motivation because it's that learned helplessness.
Now, a recommendation from a national group of experts called the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force says pediatricians should screen kids for anxiety starting at 8 and for depression starting at 12.
That expert task force identified that around 8, there's a lot of opportunity for us to be supporting children and families and having these conversations and screening so that we're catching as early as possible.
Dr. Lisa Ramirez at Metro Health says this could help spark a shift from responding to issues down the line to actually preventing them.
If we can identify some of these things early before they become a problem, it helps all of us because then we're able to give them coping. We're able to help parents and caregivers understand how to support children.
Dr. Ramirez is hoping this will change the conversation from something being wrong to promoting mental wellness.
Let's normalize asking about how kids are doing and how they're feeling.
Conversations, Armstrong says, couldn't come soon enough.
You can never start young enough to start thinking about mental health.
So when do teens go from experiencing angst to suffering from mental health issues? And when is it time to call in reinforcement? Our expert weighs in. Joining me now is Dr. Vanessa Jensen, who is a pediatric psychologist with Cleveland Clinic. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
This is the conversation every parent needs to hear, pretty much. But we're talking about teen angst. So how do you know the difference between teen angst, like normal rebelliousness, compared to depression?
Well, I think about angst as something almost everybody has sometimes, whether it's about a friend having a problem, whether it's about, you know, my outfit doesn't match everybody else's outfit today, or I'm teary because I didn't make the cheerleading squad. The normal ups and downs of teens that most of us, I think, can remember, some better than others when we were teens. And that stuff just happens. So if it's a child reacting to something and you can point back and say, yeah, I know why they're upset, or you can figure it out by talking to them, what triggers it, that's likely angst. Or sadness, if it's regular sadness, and that you want to help kids see, everybody gets sad. It's okay. You'll get through it. We can help you. if you start seeing signs of sadness that seem to go more than that, or you can't find the trigger, like, wow, grades are good, friends are good, you made the tryouts, I'm not seeing a thing that makes you feel bad, but you're showing signs like staying in the rooms a lot, more than other teens do, not wanting to socialize with friends, not wanting to be with family, sleeping too much or too little. Those begin to make you wonder if it's more than a coping issue or adjustment.
So every parent will probably say, my teen is too moody. Is moody just another word for angst, or is there something else going on?
Teens are moody. Teens are getting this rush of hormones. If you think about puberty, you know, it's about a two-year window when kids are getting all these hormones that are new, and they show it different ways. Kids are more likely to show whatever they have already. So kids who were really quiet might get more quiet. Kids who were loud and annoying might get more loud and annoying. Kids who are a little on the angry, irritable might get more angry and irritable during those kind of troublesome puberty years. So if it's a little more than usual, again, probably normal. It doesn't mean it's easy. And it doesn't mean you don't want to do things to help your child get through it.
But is it something you need to talk to a professional about?
Not necessarily. If you feel like you've done the good parenting things that you know how to do, everyone's different. We all grew up with parents who treated us differently. If you tried all the tools and things in your toolbox that your parents did and your friends have done, and they're not working, then you probably should seek out some support.
All right, let's back up a few years to the preteens. We were talking earlier, are you seriously telling me that we can avoid this whole period?
I won't say we can avoid it. We can do things that are likely to keep the communication open. I think about raindrops. You know, it's not like bringing your child in 1 hour a day and saying, okay, we're going to talk now, and you're going to tell me everything. No, it's little tiny moments. It's great when you can talk when you're not staring at them. So in the car, great time to talk. You're both staring ahead. They're not looking at your face. They don't see you staring at their face. So you're just talking like, how's the day? Yeah, you know, what happened? Anything new today? Blah, blah, blah. And just talk. Tell them what you notice. So if I notice my 9-year-old just seems kind of a little less bubbly than usual, you might just say, huh, you're not quite as bubbly as usual. Something going on? If they say no, you drop it. And then you might notice it again the next day. So you bring up these little raindrop moments and make it okay to talk. And sometimes even saying to your child, you know, I'm a pretty good listener. I got pretty big shoulders. And I'll just listen. I promise I won't try to tell you what to do. I'm just going to listen. And if your kids can get used to the idea that they can tell you about their friends, about their teachers, without you as a parent wanting to fix it, they're much more likely to come to you and let you talk.
But that's the problem. We all want to fix it.
We all want to fix it. One cue I would say for a parent who has that urge, it's okay to say it to your child. You know, honey, you know I'm going to want to fix this, but I'm going to try not to. I promise. If I start to fix it, you can poke me. Again, I'm talking about younger kids where you're trying to build that into them. You know, if I start to fix it, just remind me that I said I wasn't going to fix it. So that you get a language with your child that listening and fixing are different. Sometimes when you listen first, they might come back to you later and say, Mom, I need some help with how to fix this. You sure? You really want my advice? Positive? Okay, here goes. But make it clear what's listening and what's giving advice.
So the pandemic caused a whole host of problems with our kids today. Depression, anxiety being a couple of those problems. Talk to me about what parents really need to look for. You talked about, you know, their personality traits may get a little more the way they are. But are there other things that are warning signs? Because we see so many things in the news that, and the parents are like, I had no idea.
Yeah. I think the pandemic was part of it. I also think our digital culture, the media, not your media, but the fact that kids spend so much time by themselves in their rooms on the computers. So, and with the pandemic, a lot of kids, that's how school was. So it just reinforced that kind of isolation tendency. And the majority of parents right now, when I ask them, so what does your child do on the computer all day? They don't really know. They're like, what's their private, I don't want to be, you know, invade their privacy. And well, depending on the age, with a younger teen, you probably want to invade their privacy and build that in, because without knowing what they're doing, they may be getting into spaces that are not the healthiest for that age. But the isolation of COVID and the pandemic and so much being done on the computer makes kids who aren't comfortable socially get more and more isolated. So if you see a child who is, again, not having some social time with friends, not every child is super social. Doesn't mean they have to go to parties. But if you see what they were doing before the pandemic, just hasn't come back around. They're not having a couple of good friends, seeing friends outside of school once in a while, being involved in some activity or club or sport or arts activity, you may want to be concerned. And again, start by asking questions. You know, I notice you hardly ever spend time with us anymore. I notice you're not seeing your friend Louise. I notice this. You know, what's going on with you, honey? Non-threatening, but it's worth asking, because I do see kids tend to get more and more withdrawn as they get more depressed. And sometimes they won't share it unless you ask the question. They may not come to you. They may go to their friends. They may go to other people. You know, most parents, I encourage you to know what they're posting on social media, you know, to be on their contact list so you can see what they're putting up there.
Should you know their passwords and their usernames?
Again, depending on the age, I usually say when they start on those things, you should, and it should be just made part of the plan. It's part of the program. Just like you don't let someone drive a car without learning how to drive and driving with you, you don't get to have social media unless mom or dad or some trusted adult has full access. As you move through high school, you want to fade that. So maybe you're checking regularly when they're 12 or 13 or 14. By 16, you know, it's a random check. It's not every day. Every once in a while, by the time they're in high school or senior in high school, you shouldn't be needing to check, because hopefully they've now learned the skills to go off to college or the working world and be responsible.
You brought up a great point about privacy. You know, I know there's parents on either side of this fence where, you know, some parents will tell me that they go into their kids' rooms and they tear apart the room and look for, you know, what they think might be a problem. What's your thought on that?
Again, age dependent, younger kids, privacy is pretty limited. You know, if your door's closed and it's your private time doing the things teenagers do in private that we don't want to know about, that's cool. Parents should knock. I always see knocking is appropriate. They're changing clothes. You know, you don't want to go in there with their friends. As they get older, more privacy. But if you have concerns, my recommendation usually is don't sneak in without telling them. If a concern comes up, you get a call from school that your child's been, you know, suspended for finding alcohol. Yeah, you have a right to go inside their room and do a search, but I wouldn't do it behind their back. When they come home, it's like, just so you know, sweetie, I went through your room. Don't make it a secret, and don't read their journals. That's one of my, unless there's a real reason. If something is dangerous or life-threatening, yes. But give them a little room unless you have reason to be very concerned.
But how do you know if it could potentially be dangerous? Because there's been so many parents who never saw the warning signs.
I have no problem with a parent calling John or John's parents and saying, hey, have you noticed anything about, you know, Sam lately? I just feel like he's been more distant. Have you noticed anything? Ask the teachers if they notice things. The more you get of those things, then it may raise your flag to say, I really do need to look at what's being said. I think social media often has as much these days as kids' journals do. Their Instagram, their Snapchat probably is more likely a place they write things than a journal these days or a diary.
So your child gets in trouble. How do you approach that? Because I remember how my parents approached it with me. I was the rebellious one. And it was always like, why did you do that?
The why question typically leads to, I don't know. Right. I mean, why just doesn't get much of an answer. So I try to avoid why. More like, okay, Monica, got a call from the school. Tell me the story. Really open. Tell me what happened. Well, I don't know. No. Just tell me the story. So you got a call from the principal's office. They told you. What'd they tell you? So it's what? What'd they tell you? They said I did, da-da-da. Well, then what happened? And then what happened? As hard as it is, be as non-judgmental as you can. And just, at this point, you're just listening. You're doing the Columbo thing, for those who remember Columbo. It's like, oh, really? Wow. Huh. Okay. And then what happened? And then what happened? That must have been tough. Okay. Then what happened? Anything else you think I should know? The more open you keep it and the less judgmental. As soon as you say, oh, I can't believe you did that. Shut down. And this is hard to do. I mean, I can say it and make it sound like it's easy. It's not. It's never easy.
Well, especially if the child has done repeatedly, you know, repeated problems.
Yep.
How do you keep your judgment out of that conversation?
It's very difficult. And you can even sometimes say, you know, I'm disappointed. Like, you know, I'm not happy. Let's put that aside and just tell me what happened first. We'll deal with the other part later. Putting it out there in words and like saying, I know you're worried about the consequences. We're going to just talk about that later. Let's just lay out right now what's happened and what we need to do. And again, way easier to say than it is to do. But it's a start, is just get the information. If things like that are happening repeatedly, someone probably does need some professional help. You probably want to talk to your school, your pediatrician, look in the mental health resources and through your insurance, local mental health center, and get some help. If you ever have concerns about a child doing any kind of self-harm, cutting, scratching, making comments about hurtful things, about suicide, about not wanting to live, those flags, even if you feel like, oh, they're just being manipulative, even kids who don't really want to die can do dumb things and mean it just to make a statement, but they can go too far. And nobody wants to have that in their lives.
Your thoughts on, there's a lot of parents who want to be their teen's friend. You know, as they get older, you know, they can have more in-depth conversations with them. Your thoughts on that? And is that a healthy way to be with your child?
You know, I try not to be judgmental about parents who have a philosophy of parenting. In general, it's important that kids have boundaries and they know that I can be friendly with them and they can share things with me. And especially if you don't try to judge their friends, your kids will tell you a lot more. If you don't try to jump in and say, oh my God, I can't believe your friend did that. I'm going to call their mother and all those dramatic things. But it's also important to have boundaries and to say, you know, look, my life in this area is not important to you. I'm not going to share every detail of my life with you. And, you know, I don't want to know every detail of yours. And I'm going to have some rules for you. There are some things that are no starter, no discussion. There are some boundaries. My goal is to think of it as by the end of high school, they're going to be an adult. They're going to be making decisions totally on their own. You want to fade those restrictions and conditions so that they can make good choices on their own.
What if you don't like or approve of their friends?
That's a tough one. Generally, if you restrict it completely, it's going to backfire. You may not know all your friends' parents, your kids' friends' parents, and say, well, I have to meet them before you can spend time with them. They have to come over here and meet me, and I have to know their parents. Just doesn't fly once you get past a certain age. I do think it's reasonable to know where your kids are going and ask where they live. I want a phone number and address. Again, early on, by the time kids are driving, I don't think it's reasonable to say, you have to call me every 15 minutes and tell me where you are. Or, you know, if you decide to go on a date at this restaurant versus this restaurant, I mean, parents have the tracking mechanisms and some of them track their kids every minute of the day. That wouldn't have been really great for me as a teenager. you know, I wouldn't want my parents to know where I, knowing where I was every minute. So we want to give kids some freedom, making it clear to them, if you blow it, you go back two steps.
Or what's the most common question parents ask you?
Communicate, 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 and do it from the time they're little, open-ended, non-judgmental, just get them spending time with you. Have meals together, at least when you can. Also, have another trusted adult that's part of your child's family, whether it's a grandparent, an aunt, a neighbor, a family friend. So your child maybe has a different person, and make it okay to talk to them. You know, Lauren, you may not always want to talk to me, but you know, Aunt Monica, she's a pretty good listener too. So you've got choices for kids when they feel stressed.
All right. Dr. Jensen, thank you so much. Great insight.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
If you or someone you know is in crisis, call 988 to reach the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. We've heard a lot about social media today. The Surgeon General has linked social media to rising depression and anxiety in teenagers. The government is looking into ways to improve child online safety, but guidelines often start at home. Research shows teenagers can spend up to 9 hours a day glued to their screens. Experts suggest the following to improve their mental health. Leave your phone at home if possible. Be present with family and friends. Disable notifications. Without those constant reminders, it's less likely you'll look at your phone so often. And limit time on apps. You can turn on controls to kick you off those apps when you reach a time limit. An Ohio teen found a way to guide teens through the tough times. Tracy Townsend shares the story of a teen author who's helping others navigate through life.
Never judge a book by its cover.
I think the title can kind of, you know, throw some people off because it's How to Survive as a Christian Teenager.
Author Maya Chafin says all young people, in fact, who read her book, can pick up principles to help them navigate life as a teen.
Life as a teenager now is hard. It's very hard, especially when you have social media. You have, you know, people pressuring you to do different things that you don't really feel comfortable doing.
Chafin was inspired to write the book during the pandemic lockdown when she was a student at Westerville North High School.
A lot of sense of loneliness. You know, school was online. It was on Zoom calls. I had to do AP chemistry online, which was awful.
Right.
And just having to be isolated from a community was really hard.
And a lot to overcome for this scholar athlete turned author. Chafin shared with us some notable lessons from her journey. The first, a reminder to her peers that you are never alone.
But I kind of wrote in this devotion a story about how there was a day that, you know, 2020 was a very big deal with the Black Lives Matter movement and, you know, just students of color who were treated differently, and I really felt recognized and heard and seen by one of my assistant principals during the time, and God really comforted me through that person.
Next, that grudge you're holding against another person, let it go.
So it says, if you think about it, holding a grudge against someone is just more stress for you. If you can't stop thinking about how much they've hurt you and don't release them from your life, you won't have eternal internal peace and love for others.
Don't compare yourself to others in school or on social media. Be yourself.
It's okay to be yourself. It's okay to continue to grow into who you're supposed to be. You don't have to be like everyone else, and you don't have to fit in with the group. You don't have to always follow the crowd.
Hers was a divine realization that she can only be Maya, now a college student working to realize her dreams, with a word to help ensure other teens tap into their potential too. Tracy Townsend, 10 TV News.
That'll do it for this edition of Prescription for Life. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back here next week with another dose. Until then, I'm Monica Robbins wishing you and yours good health.
Thank you so much for tuning into Health Yeah. Please find me on Twitter and Instagram at Monica Robbins. Like and follow my Facebook page, Monica Robbins WKYC. Find video podcasts at Monica Robbins' channel on YouTube. And please subscribe. Wishing you great health and hope to see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to Health Yeah with Monica Robbins from WKYC Studios. Subscribe now so you never miss an update. And find more on everything you heard here on WKYC.com and on the WKYC app.